Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and Merry Christmas. By the time you hear this, it should be Christmas 2019, so Merry Christmas to everybody. My name is John Hansen, and on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, of course, we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And on today's show, we've got part two of our interview with Jerry Branum, where we are wrapping up the year 2019, and over here at the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, we do that by going back in time. We're not going to talk about what's happening now because we talk about the past. And last week, if you heard our episode with Jerry Branum, we went 50 years back and we talked about 1969. And we had a really great conversation about the year 1969. So now this week, on today's episode, we are going to 1979, 40 years back in the past. So this was a great year in bodybuilding. What we are going to talk about with Jerry today will include the 1979 Mr. Olympia contest, which was Frank Zane's third and final win. I was at that contest. It was in Columbus, Ohio. In fact, it was not just the Mr. Olympia that year. They also had the Mr. Universe that year. So the way they did it was the IFBB Mr. Universe was on Saturday. They had the prejudging Saturday afternoon and the finals on Saturday night. It was a really long show. They had a huge international bunch of competitors, and it was really exciting. We're going to talk about that in a second. And then on Sunday, they had the Mr. International Contest, which was an international contest, of course, with all the top amateur bodybuilders in the world. And then they had the Mr. Olympia right after that. So that finished off the weekend, and it was a really, really great weekend. So in the Mr. Universe Contest, Josef Wilkosch, who just recently passed away a few weeks ago from Germany, he was the winner of the heavyweight class over Ray Mentzer. And Ray Mentzer had probably his best year ever of his career that year because he won the AAU Mr. America contest, which was another huge contest. A lot of competitors. That was the biggest amateur show in the country. And then Josef beat out Ray at the Mr. Universe. In the light heavyweight class at the Universe, Samir Banut beat out a really, really ripped Ron Tufel. And in the middleweight class, Roy Duvall from England won the middleweight class over Richard Baldwin from the USA. So that was a really, really great show. And then, of course, the Olympia was really memorable because you had Mike Mentzer competing in his first Olympia. Mike actually won the heavyweight class. They had an over 200 and under 200-pound class. And Mike scored above Frank Zane, but then Frank Zane beat him in the post down. So that was a really great contest and a lot of other really good competitors in that show as well. In addition to those shows, me and Jerry are also going to talk about the Mr. International Contest, which was won by Greg DeFerro, who resembled Sylvester Stallone. So they used to always call him Rocky. And this, of course, was in the 70s when Rocky was being released. And then we're going to talk about that Mr. America contest that was in Atlanta, Georgia, that Ray Mentzer won. And he beat a really great group of competitors in that. And then finally, we'll go over to the NABBA Universe in England, and we'll talk about Tony Pearson and Ahmet Anulu from Turkey. They had a really great pose down in the amateur division. And then in the professional division that year, Bertel Fox won over Dave Johns, who just won the Mr. America the year before that. So a lot of great competitors, a lot of great contests. And of course, me and Jerry always go into different subjects. We talk about different things in the bodybuilding world. Jerry is a great storyteller. He's got a lot of great stories. He's been around in the sport a long time. And he was a writer for Joe Weider's magazine for many years. So he got to interview a lot of these guys, and he's got a lot of great stories, and he's still very passionate about the sport, as I'm sure all of you will agree who have heard Jerry talk before. So got a really good interview coming up in a second. This is our Christmas present to you guys, so I hope you enjoy it. All right, before we get to that, I do want to mention our supplement company that sponsors this podcast, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner called Vintage Burn. This is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner. Or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout. Or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia, Samir Banoot, and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right. Speaking of Old School Labs, I think I mentioned this last week. I have this new website called johnhansonfitness.com, and we are doing a fitness challenge. It's going to be a 12-week fitness challenge. It is going to start next month in the month of January. So if you want information on that, just go to johnhansonfitness.com. Old School Labs was helping me with this contest. They were kind enough to offer their fat burner, which is Vintage Burn. And for the first 10 people that join the contest, they are going to give you a free bottle of Vintage Burn. They're also giving prizes for the winners. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a little contest. It's going to last 12 weeks. You have to submit a before picture, and you also have to purchase a training and nutrition combo from me. So normally the training and nutrition combo is $300 and it lasts 4 weeks. So I initially set up the diet program for you and I set up a training program for you based on what your goals are and based on your own personal information. And then I follow you through the first month and I talk to you every week and I sort of tweak the diet and tweak the training so you're making progress each week. And I make sure that you're making progress each week. So that's a $300 cost for a four-week program. What I'm doing with this 12-week fitness challenge is I'm offering the same program that costs $300, but I'm doing it for 12 weeks. So you're getting two additional months for free just to be part of this fitness challenge. So it's going to go from the middle of January until the first week in April. So the way this works is you submit a before picture at the beginning of the contest. You also take measurements and you submit the measurements to me. And then at the end of the 12 weeks, I'm going to look at all the people who entered and pick out the ones that made the best progress based on whatever their goals were. So if you're trying to gain weight, I'll go by how much weight you gained or how much muscle you put on. If you're trying to lose fat and get more ripped, then I'll go by how much your waist went down and your other measurements. And we'll also, of course, go by the pictures, the before picture and then the after picture. So the first place guy or girl, whoever gets first, will get $200 in free supplements from Old School Labs. So that was really nice that they're going to offer that. You'll also get all three of my books that I released last year on Amazon, and you'll get my two training DVDs. The second place person will get $100 in supplements from Old School Labs, and you will get two of my books and one of the training DVDs. And then the third place person will get $75 in supplements from Old School Labs. You will get one of the books and one of the DVDs. So there will be prizes for the top three. I'm really excited about this. I want to do another contest after this one's over. But I hope all of you who are looking to change your body in the new year, in the year 2020, I hope you guys will enter this because it's a great chance to work with me. And it's also a chance to get some free supplements and to get my books and my DVDs. And also, I forgot to mention, the person who wins will be interviewed by me. So I will get to interview you. And you can tell me all about the training program, the diet, the challenges you went through, what motivated you to enter the contest in the first place. And it's going to be great. And we're going to put that interview on YouTube. And I will also post it on my new website, johnhansonfitness.com. So that is what's going on. I hope a lot of you guys will consider that. Or if you know somebody that wants to get motivated and needs a goal or needs something to motivate themselves to get in shape, usually the new year is a great time to do that. I hope you'll tell them about this and refer them to johnhansonfitness.com. All right, let's read some emails because I got some emails last week about some of the shows we did. So if you guys want to send me an email, just send it to naturalolympia@gmail.com. Give me any comments you want to give, any people you want to hear from on the show. I love hearing from you guys, and I will read your email on the air if that's okay with you. All right, this one was from Steven, and Steven said, I loved hearing Albert Beckles' interview. He was one of my early favorites. The Flex magazine picture of him with that tank top and holding the pool cue is unforgettable. His comment that it was once body beautiful and it has become just bodybuilding, I think that says so much. Thanks again. I wonder what his brother, actually it was his cousin, Darcy, is up to now. I thought Darcy had as good a physique as Albert. I also listened to the interview with John Lloyd, another great one from back when the times were just golden. Thanks again. The podcasts are amazing. All right. Thank you, Stephen, for that email. I got another. This was from John D. Hartman from Indiana. And John says, John, the Russ Testo interview was great. His stories were awesome. I was rolling when he mentioned Franco, seeing him pumping up at the Olympia and asking, what are you doing here? Classic. The best part was the ending when Russ shared his faith. That was an encouragement and fantastic. By the way, I only watch those Hallmark Christmas movies with my wife. I would never watch one by myself. Ha ha. Thanks again for the podcast. Your buddy from Indiana, John D. Hartman. All right, John, thank you. And this one's from Mario Strong. And Mario said, hi, John. As the year and the decade come to an end, I just want to wish you and your listeners a healthy and happy holiday season, followed by a big workouts and big gains in 2020. Your Bodybuilding Legend show is undoubtedly the foremost source for learning about bodybuilding's golden era. It even far supersedes the muscle mags of the sport's heyday. Thanks to your show, I've learned more about the legends of our sport in 1 year than in the last 50. Wow. Thank you, Mario. And Mario also says, I'm looking forward to many more entertaining and informative interviews to further increase my understanding of yesteryear. All the best, Mario. And he says, P.S., I recently had some extra large t-shirts made, and if you would like a couple, please send me a mailing address and I'll get them to you. All right. And Mario is at mariostrong.com. So thank you very much for that email, Mario. That was very nice. And yeah, I agree with Mario. I think it's great hearing directly from these guys, and we get to hear some stories that we probably didn't even read in the magazines. I know a lot of the guys I've talked to in the last year or two, I'm always hearing new stories, like Jerry Branum, our guest today. Every time I talk to Jerry, and we've had him on the show probably at least 8 or 9 times by now. But every time I talk to Jerry, he comes up with a new story that I never heard of, and a new anecdote, and a new more history that I didn't even know about. So it's always great talking to Jerry and talking to these other guys. And I've always got different stories that we hear. And speaking of that, after next week we're going to talk to Jerry about 1989. We're going to go 30 years back. And then after that, I am going to finally get together that second anniversary show that I was working on since last summer, because we started the show on July 4th. So last July 4th, I was planning on doing that, but just got too busy with work and I didn't have time to put them up. So I'm going to try and put up a couple shows where we have clips of some of our favorite shows over the last 2 years, some of my favorite shows at least, with some of my favorite guests and some of their great stories. So that'll be really, really entertaining. So we should have that coming up at the beginning of January in 2020. So stay tuned for that. I know you guys are really going to enjoy that. All right, speaking of 2020, the other thing I wanted to mention, I mentioned this also last week, was my big seminar that's coming up in Tampa, Florida. It's going to be on March 21st and 22nd, which will be a Saturday and a Sunday, and it's going to be a 2-day seminar. I've never done a 2-day seminar before, so this is really going to be a very extensive seminar. It's going to feature a lecture series where we will be in a classroom, and we're going to talk about all aspects of bodybuilding, what makes the muscle grow, different types of training routines you can use so you can make continued progress, what are the best exercises for each body part, how to overcome weak points. We're going to talk extensively about diet, how you can gain muscle without putting on fat, how you can get ripped without losing muscle. So this is basically my 40 years of experience, and I'm going to put it all together for a 2-day seminar that we're going to do in March on the 21st and 22nd of in Tampa, Florida. Included with the seminar will also be hands-on training. So we're going to spend half the day in the classroom talking about different aspects of bodybuilding. And then we're going to break for lunch. Lunch will, of course, be included with the price. And then after lunch, we will go to the gym and we will do a hands-on training where I will show all the different most effective exercises. I'll demonstrate them and I'll have everybody in the class do them as well. So you'll get hands-on training about the best way to perform each movement. And the class is only limited to 15 people. So we do have the sign up right now on johnhansonfitness.com. If you're interested in that, go to the John Hansen Fitness and sign up as soon as possible, because once we fill it up with 15 people, the class will be closed because we have to limit it in order for everybody to get the type of training that I want to get with this hands-on training. Otherwise, if the class is too big, we won't be able to do it. So actually offering a discount, also $100 off the price if you sign up by February 1st. So try to make that if you can. I would love to have as many of you guys out there as possible. Or again, if you know someone who might be interested in that, please pass that information along to them. And that'll be, again, March 21st and 22nd out here in Tampa, Florida. All right. So before we get to our interview with Jerry, where we talk about the year 1979, I also want to mention our other sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you guys want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939. Or you can go to their website at flalternativemeds.com. Or again, their number is 813-922-8939. Mention that you heard their advertisement on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and you will get a free consultation. Plus, you will get 20% off your order. All right. So that's it for our opening. Merry Christmas, everybody, and here's our interview with Jerry Branum, where we go back 40 years and we talk about the year 1979. Here we go. Let's go to 1979, which is now, that's what, 40 years ago.
Yeah, wow, jeez.
Let's talk about the Mr. America first. That was a really big contest, and Ray Mensur, who always had great potential and was Mike Mensur's brother, of course, his younger brother, he wins the overall. And I think that was probably the best Ray Mensur ever looked, don't you think?
Oh, no, unquestionably. He peaked that year.
Definitely
peaked that year. He was, Arthur Jones, the Mensur brothers.
Sure.
Which were big on the Nautilus training system. And Arthur Jones, I think Arthur Jones made a statement about Ray Mensur that year. He said that Ray Mensur had one of the largest arms he'd ever measured cold,
Yeah, I remember that.
Arthur Jones, when he used to measure arms, he'd use a steel tape, I think it was.
Yeah.
And he would literally constrict. I mean, it was like a tourniquet.
Yeah.
He put this tape on the guy's arm. I mean, when he measured, Arnold came to DeLand, Florida, where Jones was one year.
Right.
And Jones measured Arnold's arms. Arnold was going around saying he had 22-inch arms at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, Jones puts the tape on Arnold. And it comes down to, I think it was just about 19 even, or maybe a little, just a little over 19 inches.
Yeah.
And he put it in the magazine, too, in Arthur. And, of course, Arnold didn't like that at all.
Right.
He hates Jones after that. But I remember, speaking of Ray Mensur, Jones measured Ray's arms cold. They were over 20 inches. So, it was, like you said, people always think that Mike was the guy, but Ray actually had more muscle on his body than Mike.
Yeah,
He was in tremendous shape. Who else was in that show, John?
A lot of guys. The tall class was won by Gary Leonard.
Gary won in 1980. Went on to win it next year.
Yeah, he won the next year. And the short class was won by Ron Tufel.
Ron Tufel, I remember him well.
Ron lost that real controversial show to Tony Pearson the year before.
Right.
And I don't think he looked as good in 79, but he was good enough to win the short class.
Right, right. Ron was a nice guy. I used to talk to him all the time. He had great abs.
Incredible.
Thick abs, but very sculptured waist,
Yeah.
Almost, the statue like the Far East Hercules where they had thick waist, but really just sculpture. That's what Ron Tufel looked like.
Yeah.
Thick abs. Yeah, prominent obliques, but sculpture hard,
And
nice physique, thick legs, not very cut in the legs. Nice guy. I remember at Gold's Gym, he had a tattoo on his shoulder, and he thought it was hurting his contest placings, believe it or not.
Wow.
So he said to me, he told me, he comes up, he says, I'm going to have this tattoo removed. And I said, and I didn't know that you could remove it back. This is in the 70s, I think.
Yeah, you probably could.
I said, can they do that? Can they remove the tattoo? He says, yeah, I think they can. So he goes to this quack doctor or whatever. When he comes back, they had just destroyed his skin. It looked like he had a massive scar tissue.
Yeah,
remember that? Yeah. They just didn't do a good job, and I felt bad for the guy, you know?
It's funny you say that, because I had a when I was a teenager, I was training with a guy who was probably about 8 years older than me, and he was in his 20s, and he had a tattoo on his arm. And I don't think he competed, but he just wanted to get rid of it. It had his like ex-girlfriend's name or something. So he went to some guy, and the same thing. They screwed up his arm. It was like terrible scar tissue all over.
It was not perfected back then. I would have known that, I would have said, Ron, don't do it. Leave the tattoo.
Right.
You know, seriously. Because it just completely...
it looked so painful, too. You know.
It looked like just a bunch of... It looked like, horrible scar tissue all over his shoulder, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, from what I understand about Ron, is later on he got heavy into drinking. He became an alcoholic, and I don't know whether he killed himself or he died from the – I think he died from the alcoholism.
I think his liver gave out.
Cirrhosis. Yeah, that's what happens when, with the heavy drinkers. You get cirrhosis, and, that's a very sad – he was a really nice guy.
Ron was a really good bodybuilder at a young age. I remember he won the 75 Teenage America.
Okay, a top teenage guy. He won a lot of teenage titles.
And then 76 when Cal Scalak won. He won the short class, I think, that year. Or no, he got second, I think. But he was only 20. He was only 20 years old. Yeah.
He was very precocious, Ron. He trained very hard. Very nice guy. Very nice. I felt really bad when I heard that he died.
Right? Yeah.
I think he was in his late 40s or something. He wasn't even that old.
Yeah.
Very sad, But it was controversial, the loss to Tony Pearson.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, of course, had a completely different physique, smaller waist, much more muscular.
Yeah.
Much more vascular. So, you could say that. Ron was more of like what they call the Herculean physique. But not quite as aesthetic, whereas, Tony had the lines and the aesthetic. So, I would have given Tony I would have had Tony win over Ron. I would have.
Okay.
It was just harder physique.
Yeah.
Of course, Tony's still in great shape.
Amazing. Oh, yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
And he wrote this book. He recently came out with his autobiography. I don't know if you read it.
I read it, yeah. Did you like it?
Yeah, I know this guy. I said this to Tony. I said, Tony, I know you all these years, and I never had any idea you went through this.
Yeah, me neither.
What this guy went through, seriously, the abuse that he had.
Yeah.
I said to him, I told him, I said, you must have had some amazing strength of character, because the background you have, if you check some of the most murderous people on earth, antisocial, they had the same background as you.
Right.
And I said to him, was it bodybuilding that got you away from that? He said, yeah. He said that was the greatest thing that happened to me, was to get into bodybuilding, because it put me on the road where I didn't become anti. I could have easily been antisocial.
Yeah, yeah.
Horrible abuse the guy.
I know.
And he's the nicest guy. He's the nicest guy.
Right, and right. And what was really amazing was he kept it to himself all these years, too. He didn't tell anybody.
But he told me he wrote the book because he wanted to help other people. His main motivation is people that went through similar, or maybe not as bad, but similar abuse. He wanted to show them that you can, if you have, if you really have the will, you can get out of it and still have a good life. So, that was the main motivation to write that.
Right.
So, well, kudos to him for doing that.
And then in that medium class, Ray Mensur beat out Greg DeFerro, who was second.
Greg, I remember Greg. Greg, they used to call him Rocky because he looked like Sylvester. He looked like Sylvester. He was from a place called Cherry Hill, New Jersey, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Yeah, nice guy. I can tell you a story about him. We used to train together in the gym. Very, trained hard. Nice, big, thick arms.
Yeah.
Super nice guy. But there was one year, do you remember, I don't know whether it was the first Masters Olympia, I can't remember, it might have been the first one. He showed up to compete in the Masters Olympia that year. I think it was the first year they had it.
Okay.
I think that was won by Robbie Robinson, if I remember correctly, that first Masters Mr. Olympia.
Oh, yeah.
And DeFerro showed up, and he was hanging around with me and Bill Grant. We were all hanging out together at that show.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Ron DeFerro telling me the story about how his wife just completely devastated him, cleaned him out. He lost his house. And I swear to you, the guy was so depressed. I took Bill Grant aside. I said, we got to do something to this guy. I mean, he looks like he's 2 inches away from suicide.
Mm-hmm.
I felt so bad for the guy, And And, you know, he didn't, I don't think he did that well in the show that year. He wasn't at his best.
He was
way off,
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I'll never forget that, how sad and depressed the guy was. I heard he died a couple of years ago, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sad about that, too. You know, nice guy, DeFerro.
But back then, in 79, he had one of the thickest physiques. I remember people were freaking out over how big he was, you know.
Pretty big, very thick arms, yeah. I remember watching him do barbell curls at Gold's Gym, where he would he did it like almost a heavy weight.
Yeah.
And his would just blow up, and he'd just throw the bar down right in the bench.
Yeah.
And then he would do tracing. He was a very strong guy, huge, thick arms, thick body bone.
Yeah.
And I said, really nice guy. Really, they called him Rocky DeFerro.
Yeah. I remember Muscle Mag did an article on him where he was training. It was in the off season. He was all white and big. And he had this pink shirt on, and the shirt was just soaked. You know, it was like really cool because it was like real training photos. It wasn't staged at all, you know.
Oh, no, he trained hard. I remember that. I did a couple of workouts with him, and let me tell you, he trained hard.
Yeah.
I remember doing an arm workout with him where I couldn't even finish it, seriously. I mean, he drove me to do more reps and stuff.
Right.
And
right.
I got I think he did about four exercises that day. I got through the first three, and after three, my arms, I couldn't even curl a 5-pound dumbbell. He was still going. Of course. I don't want to put the – you know, he was on something I wasn't, but
right,
that's besides the fact. You know, I mean, not casting aspersions, but, you know.
Right. He went on to win the Mr. International that year that was held with the Olympia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Did they give him that ornate trophy that they used to give out? Eddie Sylvester used to give out this trophy that was, I mean, the best trophy.
It was in Columbus, I think, so they just gave him the bowl. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of when they used to have it down in Tijuana, I believe it was.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the promoter was Eddie Sylvester, named Eddie Sylvester, who I met a couple of times. He won the very first IFBB Miss the Universe. I think it was 1960.
Mm-hmm.
Nice guy, too, I remember. He used to get this very ornate trophy. And I told you the story about how I had it in my apartment once. Frank Zane had won that trophy.
Yeah.
I told you the story about the girl. I told her it was my trophy.
Thought it was yours, right?
I'll tell you, that's a trophy. And I remember Frank telling me once, I don't know if it still holds true today, but I remember him telling me that he would dump all his other trophies, but he'd keep that one because he's like a work of art.
Right. Everybody said that, yeah.
Yeah, it was. Nice looking trophy. It looked like a sculpture.
Yeah.
Really nice. Yeah.
And that was a contest that all the greats won. I mean, Frank won it. Arnold won it 1 year. I think Sergio won it 1 year. Franco won it.
It was considered one of the elite contests back then, you know.
Yeah.
For some reason, when Sylvester gave it up and it went to happening in Columbus and other places.
Yeah.
It never quite had the prestige it had when it was down in Tijuana. I don't know why. It just never did for some reason. Never did.
Hey, let's talk about the Mr. Universe that year, because that was held. Now, I don't know if you went there that year, Jerry. I did. I went to that contest because they had the Universe on Saturday in Columbus, Ohio. And then on Sunday, they had the Mr. International and the Olympia. And I remember it was a long weekend. I mean, I saw so many bodybuilders in that. I remember me and my brother went. My brother goes, when we got done, he goes, I don't ever want to see a bodybuilder again for another year.
was that 79?
79, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't there that year, but I remember it. I remember that, yeah.
But the Universe on Saturday was really, really good show. The heavyweights, Joseph Wilcox, who just passed away, he beat out Ray Mensah. So that was a real showdown.
I remember seeing that pose,
Mensah looked good, but I don't think he was as good as the America. I think he lost a little bit of his sharpness.
Yeah, you're right. That's true. He was not as sharp, whereas Wilcox was very sharp.
Right.
That was one of his peak years, I believe, Wilcox.
Yeah. And Wilcox got second the year before to Mike Mensah in Acapulco.
Right.
And then a year later, he beats Ray Mensah in Columbus. So that was pretty funny.
I remember seeing Wilcox train at World Gym. I was in Santa Monica that year. I walked in there. I was looking for Bob Parris to interview Bob Parris. And the only two people in the gym were Wilcox and Arnold.
Wow.
And they were training together, right?
What year was this, Jerry?
This is 80.
About when Arnold's getting ready for
Olympia. And Arnold, you know, and I'm looking at Arnold, you know, they're training hard, him and Wilcox.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at Arnold thinking, is he training for something? I haven't seen him look this good in a long time. I mean, he looked like pretty damn good, almost like about maybe a month away from contest condition.
Yeah.
And I didn't say anything. I just went up, you know, I started to go towards to say, because I knew Arnold, I was going to say, and I knew, you know, Wilkosch. So I wanted to just say hello to him, you know, and Joe Gold stopped me. Can you believe it? He says, don't bother Arnold when he's training. Get out of here. So I just waited that Arnold left, you know. Right. It was funny, but and you know, as history shows, Arnold, you know, pulled that surprise thing, right. You know. So I actually saw him training for the Olympia, you know, that one day. Yeah. I knew he was training. I knew when Arnold was training hard, and I could see he was training seriously. Him and Wilkosch were really they were training triceps. I remember.
Okay.
They were doing tricep extensions. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I made a little mental note. I said, Arnold's training for something. Maybe it's a movie, but I don't know.
Yeah, that was a shame that Wilkosch died this year. We had a bad year in bodybuilding. We lost Ed Corney, Franco, and Wilkosch. That's really bad. Three legends. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I might have mentioned the events. I always feel really bad when these guys die because you know, I knew from when I was much younger and stuff like that. It's almost like, you know, like that expression "Iron Brothers." It's almost like I almost look at like a family member died. I actually get depressed about it, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's very sad to see that stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just a reminder that, you know, we're all not here forever.
Yeah.
I mean, all we can do is try and do the best we can, you know, while we're still here.
Yeah, when Joseph died, I was thinking about all the shows he did, and I saw him in 79. I was lucky enough to get to see him. I saw him a couple of times, I think, compete.
Yeah.
But, you know, he never he did really well, though. He won the Universe, and then I think in 80, the next year, when Arnold won the Olympia, he won the Pro Universe in Columbus.
Yeah.
So, and then he always did pretty good in the Olympia. He got third that one year when Haney won. So he always was a top guy back then, you know.
Yeah, he always placed in the top, you know, pretty good. You know, I don't think he spoke English that well. He spoke a little bit. I talked to him a couple of times. I remember there was one year he came back. I don't think he was competing. He was at Gold's Gym, and I took a couple of photos with him. I don't know what happened to him. I tried to find the photos. You know, when I heard he died, I couldn't find them. I took a couple of photos in the gym. He was a nice guy, you know, always in hard shape.
Yeah, very hard shape. He was very hard compared to the other guys.
Yeah. I mean, somebody characterized him as being one of the hardest in person, being one of the hardest looking body. He looked like he was carved out of stone.
Yeah,
somebody
he did.
Like, can't remember who said that, but somebody described. And that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
The guy, very, very hard shape all the time, you know, good, you know, top bodybuilder.
And then with that beard, he really had that overall look, you know. Yeah,
he had that unique look, you know, the beard. You mentioned, who's the other guy that had the beard? The other bodybuilder?
Oh, Premchand from India.
Yeah, there was one other guy, I remember, who won a NAB Universe in the early, might have been 60s, something like that, 1960. An English guy. I can't remember his name. But he also, if you look him up, he competed with a beard, too.
Okay.
That's the only guy I remember competing with a beard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if I could go back in the past, I would have competed with this beard myself.
Yeah, but stand out.
I didn't think about it back then. All I had was the mustache. You
right. And then in the light heavyweight class at the Universe, Samir beat out Ron Tufel.
Right. Yeah.
And that was kind of controversial. Now, Samir had one of those physiques where I think we'd seen him on the international level for a couple of years, and he just had that great symmetry, but he never came in shape. And then finally he came in good enough shape to win. But that was really, really – I was there, and that was really close between him and Tufel, because Tufel was ripped, really.
He was?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Tufel ripped would be a hard guy to beat, because when he got I mean, he won a couple of Most Muscular titles himself, if I remember. And
right.
I'll tell you, when he got ripped, we see him in person, he was shredded. And he was ripped. And he had those really deep abs.
Yeah.
I mean, really deep abs.
Yeah.
So, you know, of course, you know, again, it's a question that Samir had the better lines.
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember Tufel's back. How was his back, Tufel? You know,
not as good as Samir's. Yeah. He was sort of straight up and down.
Okay, that's what I thought. He was kind of blocky, Tufel.
Yeah.
So I could see Samir beating him on the back development because Samir had that that tremendous back. I mean, I still think that Samir's, when he was in top shape, his double arm back shot,
I still think
it's one of the best in bodybuilding history because he had everything.
Yeah.
Lower back, sneezed to call this load like the Christmas tree, because right. the way it looks.
Right.
I mean, it's just tremendous. Every edge of his back had muscle.
Yeah.
Not many guys could top that. I mean, Sinner had what a back. Jeez.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, I know he worked hard for that, but still, there's genetics involved.
Yeah, so, right.
I don't care how many rows and chins and whatever right. you do, you're not going to have that kind of muscle right. separation. You know?
When I saw that contest, I was only 16 in 1979, and I was still learning about bodybuilding. But I thought it was a good decision that Samir beat him, even though he wasn't in the top
yeah.
shape, just because he had that great yeah. symmetry, you know, that beautiful lines, beautiful symmetry.
Right. Well, you have to take that into account. You know, we talked about this before. I mean, the way I judge a contest is, you know, symmetry and proportion, you know, come first. In other words, you have to have muscle size, of course, especially if you're a pro.
Yeah.
But in other words, I like the body balance. Everything kind of like flows together. There's no missing links. You have the, you know, the leg bicep, the calves, you know, the bicep, tricep, everything flows together. Those are the guys that should win, in my opinion, not the guy with the biggest arms.
Right.
Or, you know, I don't like the guys that are not – even some of the great pros today, they have massive muscles, but I don't like the way they look because they don't look symmetrical.
No, no.
For example, like sometimes their shoulders and arms – will get so big that it overpowers. They look like they have little tiny pecs. You know, like
yeah,
Phil Heath was like that.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy is a great bodybuilder. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he isn't. But I always felt that his symmetry was not the greatest because his arms and shoulders so grossly overpowered
right.
his pectorals. You know what I mean? It just right. didn't look right. And then you have that guy. Who's that guy? Big Ramey?
Yeah.
You know. I mean, I looked at him 1 or 2 years. His thighs were so overdeveloped.
Yeah, way overdeveloped.
That you know, his calves were not that small, but his thighs were so big
right.
that he looked like a lollipop. I mean, right. it looked like he had these giant thighs, and it looked like he had, but his calves, when you looked at them alone,
yeah.
they weren't bad, just that he old. And I'm thinking to myself, he has all these trainers. Why doesn't somebody tell him
yeah.
to pay off the heavy squats
right.
or maybe shrink your thighs and get
yeah.
your symmetry?
Yeah.
You know? And I think the last year he competed, sure enough, I think his thighs did get a little smaller.
Yeah.
And sure enough, his you know, he looked better.
Right.
He looked. I personally think that this guy, if he can get it together, this big Randy guy, I think he could win the Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, I don't know, some guys, John, you've seen this, they never get it together.
No,
somebody
no.
just can't get it together.
Right.
He's got all the tools. That massive, if he got, could you imagine him shredded and ripped?
Yeah.
Oh, God, he would destroy everybody.
Overwhelm everybody, yeah.
Oh, my, he would just destroy them all, but he never does.
No.
You know?
He's running out of time because it's been going on for years now, and he just can't
get
it together.
I know, yeah. I mean, if I knew the guy, I would tell him myself. I'd say, look, you know, I'll train you for crying out.
Right.
Don't even pay me. I want to see what I can do with you.
Yeah.
I think I can make you Mr. Olympia if you listen to me.
Yeah.
But when he listens, who knows? Probably not.
No.
Yeah.
Now, going back to that universe, in the middleweight class, a friend of ours, Richard Baldwin, got second that year to Roy Duvall from England.
Yeah, I remember Roy. Roy Duvall, another guy, nice physique.
Yeah, good physique.
Didn't he compete in the – wasn't he in the Sydney Mr. Olympia in 80? Didn't he?
Yeah, he was standing right next to Arnold, in fact.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
He had I thought he had a nice physique, nice abs, very good symmetry.
Yeah.
Not the – this guy, a little narrow in the shoulders,
right.
you know, but very nice physique. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing that show. Again, I was 16, but I remember seeing Roy, and he really – I thought he stood out from everyone else. He just had that – He just had the shape. He had just had the physique. You know, you could tell he had the thickness, and he was better than everyone else, I thought.
Gave well, very full muscle belts.
Right.
You remember?
Right.
Said, and the very round delts. It made him look really good. And he did have good symmetry.
Yeah.
He had legs. He had calves. He had nice symmetry. A pretty good lats.
Yeah. Real good lats. Yeah, he had a good back. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't remember. Did he ever win the NAPI Universe? I think he did.
Yeah, actually there was some controversy because he had actually competed in the pro division of the NABBA Universe. So I guess a lot of the competitors were protesting that, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever won the pro division though. He just won the overall in the amateur.
Oh, okay.
But in the NABBA Universe, you know, pro, they don't give you any money. It's just a different level, but they don't give you any money. So
no. It's just a nominal title. Pro,
yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And our friend Richard Baldwin looked amazing in that show. He was shredded.
Yeah, Richard always – he had the what do they call that again? I can't remember. The way they described his physique, some Greek god. I can't remember what it was.
Like Apollo.
Apollo, yeah. Yeah, they got Herculean, Apollo.
Right.
You know, he had like kind of like along the lines of Frank Zane type physique.
Yeah.
Very small waist. Of course, Richard has those great arms, you know. Yeah. Tremendous, you know.
And his abs were shredded that year, I remember. He was shredded.
Oh, yeah, great abs. I'll tell you, Richard Baldwin is a guy who really loves bodybuilding. He's in his 70s. He loves to talk about it. He loves to train. I mean, it's in his blood, bodybuilding.
Yeah.
He's like one of those guys I described earlier that will train all the way to the end. You know, he'll never give it up.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's still making gains. I mean, he recently posted on Facebook.
I know. I saw that.
I mean, put size on his arm. What is he, like 73, 74? To still be gaining muscle, because I haven't gained any muscle. Right. I think my muscle size days are gone.
Right.
I mean, I still train hard. Nothing ever happens. I mean, I'm happy to keep whatever I have, but I'm not making any gains, to be honest with you. But in my case, I think it's more a question of something happened with the strength. When I got sick a little over a year and a half ago, when I got diverticulitis, I was hospitalized. I lost 24 pounds in 9 days.
Oh, wow.
Almost all of it muscle. I can't believe my arms looked like I never touched a weight when I got out of the hospital. It took me about 7 months to gain a lot of the muscle back. But I'll tell you, John, for some reason, I never fully regained my strength back. Mm. To this day, I cannot even approach the weights. And I try, believe me. I just can't.
Yeah.
It did something to me. I just lost my strength. And, you know, for some reason, I just can't. It's very hard for me to get bigger now. Not that I want to be much bigger, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a motivating factor, you know.
Right.
At any age, if you see the muscle growing, it makes you enthusiastic. That's the only reason I want to get bigger. I'm not trying to compete or anything.
Right.
I just like the motivation. But, you know, my motivation is, you know, being healthy and feeling good and having a clear mind. That's enough to keep me going.
Yeah, so, yeah.
But even if what I'm trying to say is, even if my muscles don't grow, it's not going to stop.
Right. You're going to do it for health,
I do it for health, you know.
Yeah,
because I know it's when you don't.
Right, right. Yeah, Richard is amazing because every year he picks a time of the year and he tries to peak and get in shape. And he'll take pictures of himself with his shirt off. It's amazing. Well, in the 70s, he's still motivated to do that.
Yeah, he puts videos on, you know.
Yeah.
But Frank Zane has been doing that for God knows how many years.
Yeah.
I don't know what still does it. Every year – he would, he would choose, I think it was the summer, I can't remember, or spring, I don't know.
Almost like he was competing, yeah.
Yeah, he would like act like he was preparing for a contest.
Right.
Every year he'd do that. And he also took pictures all the way into his, 70s. I don't know if he's taking any recent pictures, but
I remember
there's a tricep shot of him not long ago where you can see he's older, you know, he has still had the big tricep,
you know.
So he still does that too.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea if you think about it. You know, give yourself to train for, you know?
Yeah.
Even if it's for yourself, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know, what's funny, too, about Richard was he was in the America that Ray Mensah won, and it was in height classes. And he was in the medium height class, and he only got eighth that year for some reason.
Eighth?
Wow. Yeah. But then they had picked a team for the universe, so they did it by weight classes.
Yeah.
And he won the middleweight division. Or, you know, he got picked for the middleweight guy.
Yeah.
And then I think he got in much better shape for the universe, and he got a real close second to Roy Duvall.
Oh, he looked great that year. I think I saw a video of him competing in that universe.
Yeah.
He looked great. You know, Richard was a good poser, too. That helps a lot also.
Right, right.
Yeah. He got eighth. I wonder who were the eight guys that beat him. They must have been pretty good, you know, because Richard was great.
I'll read it off. Yeah, he must have been off at the America, because I can't imagine him, you know.
Yeah.
Ray Mensah was the winner.
Yeah.
And DeFerro was second. Joe Means was third.
Joe Means, yeah.
Les Galvin, remember him? He was fourth.
I knew Les well, yeah.
Mario Nieves from Chicago, he was fifth.
Yeah, nice to see.
Billy Arlen was sixth.
From Texas, yeah.
Yeah. And Steven Sapaniak was seventh.
I remember him too, yeah.
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 And then Richard got eighth, but then for the universe, he was in the medium weight class, middle weight class, and then he got
Did he beat any of those guys for the Universe competition? Any of the same guys?
He was the only guy from America.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And then the lightweight class that year, Renato Bertagna from Italy, who was Franco's buddy, right? He got first place.
Yeah, a guy with great abs. I remember him also. Yeah.
But I don't even think we had an American guy in that. Because Hans Sollmeier from Austria was second.
Yeah.
And didn't he die from diuretic use, Hans Sollmeier? Yes. Yeah, a couple years later, right?
Yeah, he died from diuretic. He was one of the guys that died from diuretic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which goes to show you, I've written this in my newsletter, I warn people, you know, diuretics can kill you very easily. I mean, it's nothing to be taken lightly, you know? I mean, you know, luckily it hasn't happened a lot, but I've seen a lot of guys, I'm sure you have too.
Yeah.
Competitive bodies have overdone the diuretics and then cramped up or they got real messed up from those. You know, they can do it a matter of 2 hours.
I know.
Real fast.
I've seen people in local contests die the next day, you know.
Yeah. See guys fall off posing platforms, you know, collapse on the stage.
Yeah.
Both diuretics.
Yeah.
You know, they can bring your blood pressure so low that your brain's not getting enough blood, and you just pass out like somebody shot you in the head.
Yeah.
And you just gotta hope you don't hit your head on something. Seriously.
Right.
You know. So, and the diuretics are still, contrary to what anyone will say, diuretics are still very heavily used in bodybuilding.
Oh yeah, more so now I think than ever before, right, Jer? I mean, they weren't used that much in the 70s and 80s, were they?
Sensibly now.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, you look at this past Olympia, John, here's evidence for you. Look at this Olympia, the last one they had. You know, look at the prejudging. Quite a few guys at the prejudging, then look at them as they appeared at the finals just one day later.
One day later, right.
And let me tell you something. You and I have been bodybuilding a long time. You don't make that kind of improvement in less than 24 hours unless you took something.
Right.
And there's only one thing that can do it that I know of, diuretics.
Yeah.
They can reduce your body water so much that you can actually look more defined in less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
So, yes, extensively used in it. Yeah. And there's no drug test for it, so they get away with it.
Right.
It's all a blue about drug testing. There's no drug testing in the pros, nothing. These guys can take whatever they want.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm amazed at these local competitors, like bikini girls, who are going in like the Florida State Championships, first contest ever. Their coaches all have them on diuretics, all of them.
John, it's extensive.
Yeah.
And I'm speculating when I say this. I would say that about 99% of those bikini women and the fitness are taking diuretics.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more extensive with the women than even the men.
I know.
Well, most of the men take diuretics, let's say, between the pre-check, the fun. These women take, all of them take it.
Yeah.
Because they have to be real lean and tight, lean and tight. When they turn around, they got to have that tight butt, you know? They're so afraid
of having
water under the skin.
Right.
You know, it's just amazing to me. I mean, again, thank God that they're not suffering any side effects. But one of these days, I wouldn't be surprised if one of them passes out on stage with this stuff, you know.
Well, I've talked to a lot of them who say after the show, their bodies are so messed up, they get this massive weight gain that doesn't go away for months, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've written about that.
Yeah.
They've done studies, John. I've written about this in my newsletter. They've done studies of female competitors where it takes them – are you ready for this? 6 to 9 months for their metabolism to return to normal. That's how screwed up they are.
Wow.
I mean, because these girls are taking thyroid drugs, they're taking diuretics, and they coupled it with the strict diets. I mean, they are, it's like that Biggest Loser show that they used to have.
Yeah.
And people would lose 100 pounds in, what was it, 3 or 4 months?
Yeah.
But what they didn't realize is that by doing that, you know, they're working out, which is like several hours a day plus the stringent diets, these people permanently messed up their metabolisms where they almost all gain the weight back and more so.
Right.
But you know what the interesting thing is? The only people from that show that were able to keep the weight off did two things. They stayed on a diet, not a stringent, they're just a, you know, reduced calorie diet. Yeah. They watched what they ate and they continued to exercise.
Yeah.
Those people managed to keep only the ones that kept the weight on. All the other ones went back to the habits. Oh my God, they were twice as big.
Yeah.
If they were 500 pounds before, they were 700 pounds.
Right, right. Because their metabolisms were so messed up from losing all that weight so fast.
Shot, permanently depressed metabolism.
Right.
And to a lesser extent, that's what happens with a lot of females. And you know what? These coaches, I know I've raved about this before, but these coaches, I tell you, I don't know a lot of these guys, but I've seen some of their programs, and they make me shudder.
Yeah.
These guys have no idea what – and I'm not – I don't want to generalize and say they're all messed up. They're all stupid. But a lot of them are. They don't have any background. They don't have any science background. They don't – they I don't know where they come up with this stuff, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But it's just lucky. I'm hoping that these women also have some medical supervision.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, sooner or later, they're going to get messed up by these guys.
Yeah. I knew a girl from the gym. She was in her 40s, had never competed. It was always it was her goal. She wanted to go on to a contest. So she did a bikini contest. She got a contest prep coach. And after the contest, her weight ballooned up. And she never did another show again. She's like, I'll never go through this again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw it happen with a girl a couple of years ago. Well, it's quite a few years ago. In fact, she just sent me a Facebook request not long ago. I don't want to mention her name. I don't want to embarrass her. But she was a beautiful, beautiful, I mean, movie star beautiful, this girl. And she was one of the early competitors in it wasn't the bodybuilding. I don't know what they call it. Was it fitness? I can't remember. Anyway, but she competed. She won. But it turns out she was working with a guy who had her on, like, large amounts of thyroid drugs, clenbuterol, and diuretics. And what happened was she ballooned up so much that she never was able to – she wanted to compete, but she got so fat, you know, just unrecognizable.
Yeah.
And that was it. Her career was over.
Yeah.
What she looks like today, I should look at her Facebook. She probably may be back to normal after all these years. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a shame because this girl was beautiful body, just an incredible – I mean, better looking than any movie star I've ever seen.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that fat people are ugly. You know, in case anyone's listening, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that she just gained so much weight that she became unrecognizable. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And it was all because of poor advice.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, before we go to the 79 Olympia, Jerry, I want to talk about the 79 NABBA universe. Tony Pearson and Ahmet Anulu from Turkey both competed, and they had this amazing showdown. I guess the pose down lasted for minutes, and it was really, really tight. Ahmet Anulu ended up beating Tony, and Tony, I just did an interview with Tony. He thought that was kind of controversial. He thought he should have beat him, but that was a really good – the other guys who won, Steve Shabari from Palestine – he won the short class, and Bill Richardson from the United Kingdom won the tall class. But I think the real contest was Ahmet Anulu and Tony Pearson in the medium class.
Well, Ahmet Anulu, I called him in one of my articles. I referred to him as a perennial competitor.
Mm-hmm.
He competed in a lot of NABBA shows. I don't. You'd have to look it up. I know he competed quite a few years before he won it. He just kept trying, kind of like Harry Johnson in the AU America. Competed about like seven times before he finally won in 1959. He's one of those guys.
Yeah.
Very muscular guy, short guy, very muscular. I could see where it'd be tough between him and Pearson because Tony was ripped also.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I'd have to look at the pictures, but it's hard to say. I mean, I don't remember how Ahmet's back looked.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Tony had those really wide lats and good back. So maybe that's what Tony's thinking of. Maybe Tony had a better back than him, and that's why he felt he should have won. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I'm going to look. He was good. He was a good bodybuilder.
Yeah, he was thick. Yeah.
The guy was always in shape, and he was cut. He was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and Tony amazed me, too, because that was only 1 year after he won that 78 America, where he was ripped, but he was kind of thin. I think he only weighed 180 pounds when he won that America, if you can believe it or not. Yeah. You know, that's amazing. Yeah. But 1 year later, when he did this universe, he looked much thicker. He put on a lot of muscle. Yeah.
Yeah, he gained a lot of size. That's true. 1 year. That's true. Yeah.
And then in the pro division, Bertel Fox beat out Dave Johns. And this is when Bertel Fox was at his peak, I think, you know. Remember how crazy he looked back then in the 70s when he was competing in those NAVA Universe shows? Oh, my God.
I saw him at Gold's Gym when he was on 2nd Street. You know, they used to have these fake dumbbells they used to use for photo sessions.
Right.
They looked like they weighed 150, these big, giant dumbbells, but they were made out of balsa wood.
Right.
So they weighed about a half a pound at most, right? You know, and they use it, and, you know, have the bodybuilders contort their faces like they were curling these fake dumbbells.
Right.
So I came in the gym one day, and who was that English photographer? The heavy suit, Chris Lund.
Chris Lund, yeah.
He was getting ready to shoot Bertolt Fox. You know, it was right around that time or something. And Bertolt Fox had these two dumbbells. It was doing curls like this. I mean, like this.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and I'm thinking, I'm thinking he's got the fake dumbbells. It was quick, but sure does look real. And then you put the dumbbells on the rack, and I heard the clanging. And I said, my God, those are real weights. Done. They were like 85 pounds each, and he was curling them like they would weigh 10 pounds. Yeah. He was going like this.
Yeah.
I've never seen anybody curl dumbbells like
that.
Right. 85 pounds like this.
Right.
I mean, you swear you think it was 5 pounds.
Right.
I still remember that. His arms were gigantic.
Gigantic, yeah.
He had this pose. You know when he did the most muscular?
Like
he would kind of go like this.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Right.
And I remember thinking, I saw him do it right in front of me. And I'm thinking, I've never seen a guy, you know, even if you have fairly big arms, when your arms go away from the body, they tend to look much smaller.
Right. Right.
His didn't. They look like legs.
Yeah.
They were like this. They were like
30-inch arms. Yeah.
This guy is really thick.
Right.
Tell you, Bertolt Fox had a temper. Let me tell you. He went on the tour there. You know that the Grand Prix tours, the Pro Tour, 1 year.
Yeah.
It was in the 80s, I think it was. And we're all sitting in a restaurant. Me and a bunch of the pros. You know, Bill Grant was there, I think, also. And we were waiting for the meal to come out. I can't remember what country it was in. And Bertolt Fox just had this temper tantrum because they were taking too long to bring out his food.
Yeah.
And I thought he was going to kill somebody. You know, I mean, he got so mad. I'm thinking, you know, I'm looking at the guy. I'm thinking, what the hell? You know, what is he going to kill the waiter when he comes? You know, what's going on? You know, so when he got in that trouble later on, you know, for shooting his girlfriend or whatever it was, you know, I wasn't surprised because I remembered that incident. And this guy had to have, I mean, it was, you got to understand, John, we were laughing and talking just a minute before, and suddenly Bert says, where's the food? You know, he's eating English. Where's my food? And then he started going crazy, you know? And everybody's trying to, Mike Christian, everybody's trying to calm him down.
Yeah.
You know? Finally, he calmed down, and I'm thinking, wow, this guy's scary.
Yeah.
You know? And his wife worked in the Weider office, and she used to come in with like, you know, black eyes and
smokes. Oh, my God. Wow.
He'd say, you know, I overheard a conversation once. I said, you know, somebody said, what happened to you? She said, oh, I ran into a door. And I mumbled to somebody. I said, yeah, a door named Bertolt Fox.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the strange part was that if you get him at the right, you know, I don't want to create, you know, I already did create a bad impression for him. But I mean, if you get him at the right time, I know it sounds funny, but he was a nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, if he wasn't angry at somebody, he was a nice guy to talk to, Bertolt.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of feel, I mean, I know he did it himself, but, you know, I feel bad about how he wound up. You know, I guess he's still in prison for that, you know?
Yeah. He'll be in prison for the rest of his life.
You know, I made a joke about it. It was a kind of a black comedy joke. I shouldn't, you know, when I heard he was on trial, I told a friend of mine, I said, they're going to give him a suspended sentence. So the guy says, what do you mean? Are they going to let him get away? I said, no, they're going to hang him. I shouldn't have said that. But luckily he escaped them. That would have been his fate, you know, that down there.
Yeah, they were going to do that. They were going to hang him.
They were going to hang him. But luckily he didn't get a suspended sentence anyway. Right. You know, he's still there. You know, so anyway.
Well, let's talk about the Olympia that year, Jerry. I was there at that one also. And this was Frank Zane's third Mr. Olympia win.
Huh?
I think everybody agrees that was Frank Zane's best look ever because he was bigger than ever and he was still ripped. And then it was a big showdown between him and Mike Mentzer. Mike won the heavyweight class. So this was Mike Mentzer's first year as a pro. And he goes in, he almost wins the Olympia on his first time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there you go again. And now you have the two physiques competing against each other. Yeah. The Hercules physique represented by Mentzer. In fact, Mentzer looks so much like Hercules that you might remember a famous cover, Joe Weider, had him posing in the, you know, exact same position as the famous Farnese
Hercules.
Right,
I remember that. Right, with the...
Yeah. It was a great shot,
That was a great shot.
But, you know, and Mike, and then you have Frank Zane with, again, with the Apollo physique, which is the slicker aesthetic, you know, line. So, I guess it all depends on... I think Frank was probably also a little harder than Frank at his best was some of a sight to behold.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the other day, he posted a photo of himself on his Instagram page, taking his competitive days of a back shot. You know, the lighting was great, but my God, his back was looked as good as Samir's.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize Frank's back was that good. I mean, he had muscle everywhere.
Right. Total detail.
Yeah, when this guy was in shape, he had shredded on top of shredded.
Yeah,
and beautiful physique. Not the biggest guy,
right?
But he had just a great symmetrical physique, hard to beat. If Frank wasn't there, Mike probably would have easily won.
Yeah, well, at the prejudging, you know how they did it. They had the over 200 pounds and the under 200 pound class. So I think 300 was the perfect score. And I think Frank got like 297 and Mike got 300.
So
Mike was leading going into the prejudging or going into the pose down. So then what they did was they took the top three from the under 200 pound class and the top three from the over 200. That was the top six. And then they had the pose down. And I don't know if you remember, Mike was letting his stomach stick out. Frank beat him in the pose down because Frank looked great. And Mike was posing, I think, too fast. And I think he must have ate something between the prejudging and the night show. I think he was drinking Coca-Cola or something, and his stomach was sticking out. And then that's where Frank beat him.
Yeah, Mike tended to pose a little bit too fast when he posed. Tended to move too fast and pose to pose. Didn't Mike win an IFBB Universe in Acapulco? He also got a perfect score. Was it
in the year before that? Yeah, in 1978. So
So he's actually gotten two perfect scores in New York.
Yeah.
I wonder if anyone else has done that.
I don't know.
I don't know. Two perfect scores.
Yeah.
Because I remember reading that nobody before or since in the IFBB universe ever attained a perfect score other than Mike Mentzer. He was the only man to ever do that.
Yeah.
I've written it, so I hope it's true.
Yeah. Well, I think that just goes to show you that Frank was the more seasoned competitor and he stayed relaxed, and he knew exactly what he was doing, and
Frank was smart. I mean, when he stood relaxed on stage, you might remember, he was the only guy, one of the only guys always to remember to keep his legs flexed.
Yeah, right.
You know, when your legs aren't flexed, they don't look as defined. See?
Right.
In fact, I remember Vince taught me that years ago. Vince Garanda, he said to me, when you go on a contest, when you're on stage, always flex your legs first so you won't forget to flex them.
Yeah.
Always them flexed. He says it makes you look more muscular. I never forgot that. Frank, I don't know whether he got that from Vince also, but I remember he always did that. He always had his legs flexed so he looked just shredded all the time.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, if Mike didn't do that, you know, if Mike didn't flex his legs and had his stomach hanging out, well, you know, there goes the contest.
Well, it was interesting, too, because back then no one – had a stomach hanging out, right? I mean, everybody had tight waist. It might be a little smooth, but I don't remember anybody ever having a stomach. Like now, of course, everybody has that. But back then, I think Mentzer was the only one that let his stomach hang out.
I can tell you why. There was a reason for that. Because I watched Mike train abs. You know what he did? He used to do a sit-up over a bench. He'd hook his, you know, what they used to call the Roman chair. It's kind of like when you hook your feet on the, you sit on a bench, and you hold a weight like over here, and you do these sit-ups, right?
Right.
You know, very popular at the original Gold. Zabo Kazusti used to do 1,000 of those a day.
Jeez.
Arnold still tells people today that he always started his workout by doing 300 of those sit-ups.
Yeah.
Frankly, I don't remember seeing Arnold ever do 300 sit-ups, but well, I'll take his word for it. But the point being that when Mike did it, John, he held a 100-pound plate on his chest.
Wow.
And when he went back, he went all the way back to where his back touched the ground.
Holy shit. Really?
He was doing two things there. He was putting tremendous stress on his lumbar vertebrae, right?
Yeah.
Because he's literally arching his back in the bottom position.
Wow.
And stretching his abs with all that weight, he actually caused the abs to kind of stick out.
Right.
When he lagged. See, that stomach that you see on, because when you notice when he flexed, he had abs.
Yeah.
It wasn't that he was fat.
No, no.
It was that the abdominal muscles were so distended and stretched from doing those heavy Roman chair that it stuck out. That's why he had that stomach.
Right.
It wasn't fat. And it wasn't enlarged organs or anything like that.
Yeah, it wasn't growth hormone or insulin like it is today.
It was not growth, no drugs.
They didn't have that back then, yeah.
It wasn't from these other excuses that people have, though they eat a lot of food,
yeah.
As if it just sits there and never moves,
right,
which I
find
so ridiculous.
I know.
But in this case, you know, if you do that, and I still see, John, I still see people doing it at Gold's Gym. They go on the glute ham machine, and they don't go all the way.
I see that too.
100-pound plates.
I see that too. Yeah.
Wrong, but they're you know, some of them use, you know, no weight or maybe a, you know, 25, but they're going all the way back, and I just think to myself, they're going to regret that,
yeah,
because they get either a lower back problem or they're going to have that poochy abs, you know, that
right,
that belly look.
Right.
They're going to regret it, man, because you know, I don't know how to correct that. I mean, once it happens, maybe a surgeon can do it. It's like your abs are stretched.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like when women get pregnant, then there's a medical term, I can't remember, where their abs literally separate,
yeah,
to allow the belly to come out from the pregnancy.
Yeah.
And that's permanent.
Yeah.
That's separation. I mean, if one of those women who had a child, if she becomes a bodybuilder, you'll see that her abs are a little bit separated.
Yeah.
They got like a separation in there. There's a hormone that does that. I think it's relaxin. It's called. It's literally separates the abs to allow the abdominal protrusion to make room for the expanding uterus, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The same principle holds, I know, in a different manner for Mike Mincer. He stretched his abs doing those crazy Roman chair sit-ups.
Right.
I never saw anybody use 100 pounds. He held it on his chest.
Wow.
I mean, if I tried to do that, I'd slam my head on the ground again.
Right.
I would do one rep because I'd be knocked out.
Right, right. But you know what's really funny about it, Jerry, is like you see all the bodybuilders, like, just to show you how much things have changed over the last 40 years,
yeah,
no bodybuilders ever had a protruding stomach back then. And now it's like every one of them has protruding stomachs. That's how far we've gone, you know, from everybody had the small waist and now everybody's got the big stomach.
When I competed or even when I attended contests in the 60s and 70s, I can't think, seriously, I was thinking about this one day. I can't think of one single bodybuilder. Wait a minute, let me make an exception. There was a couple of guys that, you've seen these kind of guys, they kind of don't know anything about bodybuilding. They hear there's a contest, they of trunks,
right,
and they step to the stage and they have these beer,
like
these beer bellies.
Right.
That's a different story.
Right.
But I'm talking of real bodybuilders. I don't remember one of them ever having a protruding abdominal.
No, me neither. Never.
You know, and it's obvious that the guys today are doing something that they weren't doing back then. And, you know, it's obviously something to do with trunks. I mean, the excuses I hear for this, I made a video about this a couple of years ago. I went over all the possible reasons for the protruding. And when I got to the part, I started laughing about, it's all the food they're taking in. You know,
right,
it stays stomach. I said, first of all, you have something called digestion. I said, and second of all, if the food really stayed in the stomach as long as, you know, throughout they would be in trouble. They would have an abdominal blockage, which would require an emergency room, or they'll die.
Yeah,
so
right,
say that they have the protruding stomach.
Because they eat too much.
Besides which, what kind of crazy bodybuilder would load up on food right before a contest?
Right.
You know, nobody's that stupid.
Right.
You know, if you load up on 90,000 calories before when you're on a contest, it makes no sense at all.
No.
So it's not from food, you know.
Right.
I think, obviously, it's some sort of drug effect.
Yeah.
Exactly what I still don't know, to tell you the truth.
Right.
All I know is this, and I think you'll agree with this, Joe. I noticed that the protruding stomach began when insulin started to get popular among them.
Yeah.
And so it has something to do with insulin.
Yeah.
You know, insulin and growth hormone, I think, probably are responsible for it.
Yeah.
And I'm talking huge amounts of growth hormone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, why do you hear some of the doses that, that have been used, the growth hormone? I just mind-boggling.
I know.
Mind-boggling. I mean, you know, I read one guy was taking 27 units a day.
Yeah.
27 units, the body makes about a quarter of a unit. This guy's taking 27.
Yeah.
Gee, where do these guys get this stuff from?
Right, right. There was a competitor that I in Chicago. He was a couple years older than me, and he was a good teenage competitor. Then when he went over, when he turned 20, he started bulking up. But he was the same way. He used to do like a 50-pound plate with sit-ups, you know. And he had great abs, like when he was in the contest. He had great, but in the off-season, he would bulk up like a lot of us did back then. And he was only like 5'8", but he would get up to 250, which back in the early 1980s, that was a big bodybuilder, 5'8", 250, you know.
I agree. Yeah.
And he would wear sweaters, and his stomach would stick out. And if he would go to watch a contest, you know, and he was in the off season, people didn't recognize him because his stomach was sticking out. People thought, this guy's fat, you know.
Yeah. But
it just amazes me now when I think of the change between, you know, 40 years from ago and what it is now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I think, I don't know, I think that this this protruding stomach thing is, has gotten to some of the guys where, you know, in the last Olympia, I noticed that some of the guys still had a belly, but it wasn't as prevalent as, let's say, a couple of years before where just about every guy had a belly.
Yeah.
You know, now there's only a couple of guys, and you see in the side poses when they go to the side.
Yeah.
They fix, they're pulling their stomach in. They got this beer, it looks like they have a beer belly.
Yeah.
You know. And yet when they do the ab poses, they got these thick freaking abs.
Yeah.
So it doesn't go together.
No.
Guys with beer bellies don't have abs.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
So there's something going on there.
Well, the whole concept of bodybuilding is they have the small waist and the wide shoulders. That's the whole concept, you know?
Yeah, I know. And it's just a terrible turnoff. It looks so ugly to me. I mean, I always hope, you know, that one of these days some scientists just analyzes one of these guys and, and sees exactly. It hasn't been done for some reason.
No, no.
Yeah, I'd love to know what exactly causes that. You know, how a guy can have tremendously sharp abs where they even have veins going through the abs,
right?
And they stand relaxed and got this belly that looks like they're pregnant. How is that possible?
I know.
Well, you know, of course, there's one little hint though. Have you ever seen any of these guys with the big bellies do a vacuum pose?
No.
Mm-mm. I haven't either. That was one of my theories in my video. There's something called the transversalis abdominis. It's a deep lying abdominal muscle. You can't see it. What are you seeing when you see the abs on the rectus abdominis?
Right.
When I was a kid, I got a big laugh at the gym. I called it the rectum abdominis. Everybody laughed. It's the rectus abdominis. But anyway, the transversalis abdominis, it acts like a girdle. What it does is it actually holds in the abdomen. You know, when it's strong, if it gets weak, you know, you can get a little bit of a protrusion.
Right.
You know, and, you know, my theory was that is a possibility. These guys have developed such thick abs because people don't realize the abs are not normally flat. The normal shape of the abs is a slight curve.
Okay.
Now imagine, you know, when the bicep, any muscle starts to hypertrophy, it grows, it sticks out. Well, the abs, now think about it, it's naturally shaped like a curve. When it gets thicker, it's going to stick out a little more, right? Now, if you couple that with weak transversalis muscles, that would explain a bulge. It would explain a protruding belly. The problem is, I don't think it would protrude quite as much as it does. There's got to be something else involved.
Yeah.
So it could be a combination of that anatomical problem that I just described with the anabolic drugs. I think it's a combination of both. That's my theory. That's what I think.
Why would it get so weak on these guys?
Because you know why? You know, there's only one way to work the transversalis. You got to do a vacuum.
Mm.
That's the way to work it. If you actually practice vacuum, and of course Frank Zane was his most famous pose.
Right.
Remember? Vacuum. But I mean, if you do that regularly, that's the only way to work it.
Yeah.
If you don't do vacuums, like any other muscle, it just gets weak.
Yeah.
Way to work that muscle. You can do it lying on the floor. You can do it on all fours. You can do it standing up like a back. But you have to basically draw in your abdomen.
Hmm.
And you know the truth is, really, now that we're talking about, I think bodybuilders should male, female, they should do this routinely. In other words, like train that, you're training your abs, right? Why not train the deep abs?
Right.
Just a couple of vacuum poses every day. You know, just suck in your abs as much. Because what it will do, it will allow you to have a much flatter stomach, male and female.
Right.
People see me doing this, but nobody ever. I thought it was so important. I wrote a whole article on it in my newsletter.
Yeah.
Because people aren't aware of this. If, you know, I mean, they should do it. But, you know, these guys have done something where they just can't do vacuums. The guys
I know.
They can't. They can't do
It's funny you mention that, too, because I'll post a picture of me, like, when I was in my 20s or something, and I do a vacuum. And they said, I'll get people questioning me, like, how did you learn how to do a vacuum? And I'm like, I didn't really learn. I mean, once you get lean and you get ripped and your stomach's tight, it's easy to pull in a vacuum. I mean, it's not – it doesn't take practice. I mean, it's just – it's easy, you know.
Oh, it doesn't take practice. It's easy. But these guys, you know, the guys with the bodybuilder, the protruding stomachs
– they can't do it.
They have done something to themselves. And, again, I don't really know why. But they can't. They just cannot do it. They can't suck their abs like that, their stomach like that.
Right, right.
I mean, I don't know what the solution is for those guys.
You
know?
Yeah.
But then again, I've seen guys who had protruding abdomens, and when they quit bodybuilding, the protruding abdomen was gone.
Yeah.
So that's another mystery.
That is a mystery. Like Dorian Yates, his is gone.
Just to mention, you took the words. I was just going to say Dorian Yates.
Yeah.
He had a protruding abdomen the last, what is it, 2 or 3 years he competed?
Right.
Since today, he doesn't have any protruding abdomen at all.
Oh, he's got tight abs, yeah.
Yeah, so what is it? I mean, that's what throws me. How can you have it? I mean, if it was internal organs, like some people would grow from internal.
It would never go away.
Your organs aren't going to shrink back. I mean, you know, but it's just a mystifying thing. I'd love to know what causes it.
Yeah,
I mean, no, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, those
are. Thank God you don't see it in the women, though. Could you imagine if the women had that?
Yeah, right now.
You would think they were pregnant,
right?
You know?
We haven't seen it yet, but you never know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
They're bringing back female bodybuilding, you know.
I know. That. Heard, yeah.
This Olympia, let's hope we don't see any bloated abs on them. Thank God. You know, they're going to have an obstetrician waiting in backstage.
Oh, my God. Well, before we go to 1989, Jerry, I want to mention this Olympia, too. There was a couple guys that really well, first of all, it was Chris Dickerson's first Olympia.
Yeah.
And I remember I was at – like I said, I was at that contest in 79. And I had heard of Dickerson because he had won the America, of course. And I knew he won the NABBA Universe a few times. And he was pretty famous in the magazines. But I had never seen him in person. And I remember how really impressed I was when I saw Dickerson in that show because he was he had that thickness, and I was like, I remember the first thing I thought of, like, I could see why this guy's won so many championships, you know.
Right. He had you know, he wasn't the biggest guy.
No.
Chris has been criticized because of his arm, you know, his great arm development. Yeah. Actually, his tricep's not bad, just his bicep isn't very good.
I think he's unfairly criticized, though.
I think he is, too. I mean, because I've always said, if you look at the symmetry this guy has – I mean, when he stood relaxed, like, you know, just with his arm down in the lineup, he literally looked like he had a perfect physique.
Yeah.
He had no, looked like he was flawless.
And incredible legs, too.
Great legs. You know, I remember the very first time I met Chris, it was at Mid-City Gym in 1964. It was, you know, it was right before he started competing regularly. I don't know if he had competed yet then at all. I'm not sure. But I was introduced because remember earlier I said Bill Pearl was my childhood idol.
Yeah.
And the owner of the gym told me, that guy over there, he just came from Bill Pearl's gym in California.
Yes.
I said, really? I said, I got to talk to this guy. So I went up to introduce myself, you know, and it was Chris Dickerson.
Yeah.
And he was, what's this guy right off the start? And he starts talking about, you know, Bill Pearl. He says, yeah, I train under Bill Pearl and this and that. And, you know, I'm looking at him and suddenly my eyes dart, look down at, you know, Chuck. And I went, what? Where did you get those calves? I've never seen calves like that.
Right.
And you know what he told me? He said, I was born with them. He says, I'm one of triplets. There was three of us. All of us were born with big calves. And when we used to wear shorts as children, the kids, the other children would make fun of us because we had these big calves.
Yeah.
That's what he told me. That's the story. And I met one of his brothers not long after that, who was a ballet dancer, if I remember correctly. I think he was he looked just like Chris.
Wow.
Just Chris Dickerson, with no muscle,
yeah,
just, you know, skinny body, but you know, I can see his calves. Sure enough, he had the big calves too.
Wow, yeah.
Just like Chris, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, I think the third guy died or something like that. But
yeah, I think you're right.
And that's the first time I met Chris, and like you say, he was people put him down, but I thought he was great. I mean, he was always in shape. I remember one time before a show, me, Chris, and Bill Grant went out to a restaurant to get something to eat. So Chris orders something like baked fish, uh-huh, you know, because he had a contest coming up.
Right.
And Bill Grant orders a hamburger and French fries. And Bill Grant was going to compete in the same contest. And Chris's eyes open. He's aghast. He says, "Bill, you're going to eat that? There's a contest in like 8 days. You're going to eat that?" And says, Bill says, "Yeah, what's wrong with it?" And Chris was like stunned. He couldn't believe it.
Right.
But if he had looked closer, see, Bill, you know what Bill Grant's trick was? And he didn't even know he was doing this. I pointed it out to him. Bill Grant's trick was that he ate whatever he wanted. Grant was a naturally slim guy.
Yeah.
He was very skinny when he started. He was a slim guy who had a high metabolism. That's the first thing.
Right.
But what he did, here's his trick. He'd order a hamburger and French fries. Get this, John. He needed like a bite of the hamburger, three French fries, and that's it.
Okay.
That's it. That's all
they
need.
Yeah.
So it's like Mike Mentzer, you always used to say, you know, calories count. It's not what you eat. It's what you eat by the end of the day.
Right.
If your calorie intake is less than what you burn, you're still going to lose body fat, even if it's from ice cream.
Right.
That's Mike used to use the ice cream example.
Right.
But it's true. See, Bill had a high metabolism, and he didn't really eat a lot. That's why he was so cut.
Right.
See, Chris had the mindset that I had, and I saw another bodybuilder do that, Charles Glass, when I was interviewing him. He also ate a big plate of French fries.
Yeah.
I said, Charles, don't you have a Mr. Universe coming up? He said, yeah, so? I said, well, you're eating French fries? He said, I eat this all the time. Doesn't bother me.
Right.
He said, I eat whatever I want. I said, my God, you must have metabolism.
Yeah.
And I ran into Charles not long ago, a couple of months ago, and I said, I got to ask you, Charles, after all these years, do you still eat whatever you want? He said, yes. And he's still not fat. He's lean.
Right, right.
Just full of lucky guys, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what are you going to do?
But I remember seeing Chris in that contest, and I think, you know, a lot of people will look at him, I think, when he won that 82 Olympia, and I think he wasn't at his best, I think, that year when he won the Olympia.
But
when I saw him at 79, he was so thick. I remember, like, him and Zane were doing relaxed poses, and they did a relaxed to the back, you know. And Dickerson's lats were so thick. His traps were so thick.
Yeah.
You could tell this was a guy who did, like, a lot of heavy, like, Olympic-type lifts and power lifts, you know.
Yeah.
And Bill Pearl trained him, so obviously he knew what he was doing, you know.
Well, yeah, Bill Pearl was a stickler for training the whole body, you know.
Right.
The ectomuscle had to be trained.
Right.
And also, Chris might have got that look because, you know, when he competed in 1970, when he won that America, the AAU still had this thing called athletic points.
Right, right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
They had this idea that Mr. America, you know, anyone listening to this will just laugh at how archaic this sounds. But
right.
For years, the AAU Mr. America, they felt that it had to be a well-balanced man who as Mr. America, should show something besides having a physique.
Yeah.
He had to have athletic ability.
Right.
So he had to show proficiency in some sport. And I think the maximum points you can get were 5 points of athletic ability.
Yeah.
You know, athletic ability. Now, if you didn't get those points, you could have the best physique and place really low. I know, you know, because 5 points, as you know, that makes a huge difference in bodybuilding.
Yeah.
Some of them won by 1 point.
Right.
You know. So what Chris did is, and he did this, Dennis Tenorino did the same thing. Chris went to a place called, certain place in New York, where he was taught Olympic weightlifting.
Yeah.
He had to lift certain amount of poundages to qualify to get the full 5 athletic points.
Right.
And he did it.
Right.
But he did this for a year. Now think about it. All those snatches and clean and jerks.
Right. The trap.
People don't realize that because nobody does this anymore, but those things were actually give you a really – if you're a bodybuilder, you don't see it in the weightlifters because they don't do a lot of isolation. But if you have a bodybuilder who's doing the normal rows and whatever chins, and you do those weightlifting movements, you get this really thick traps and back,
right?
Very thick. And that's how Chris really got that development from the year he had to do Olympic weightlifting.
Yeah.
He got the real thing. I saw it. I saw the change in him.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, Chris, what are you doing? He says, I'm doing the Olympic lifts. A guy named Morris Weisberg trained him at the, I can't remember, a certain YMCA in New York. Mm-hmm. He was an Olympic weightlifting coach. He trained both Chris and Dennis. Dennis also got the 5 points. He lifted enough to get the point. You didn't have to set any world records. You have to understand.
Yeah.
You just had, you know, they went by your weight. You had to do, like, it was the press, the snatch, and the clean and jerk. Those were the three Olympic lifts at the time. You had to get a total of all three in order to get a certain, the maximum. And both Chris and Dennis got it. And both of them won the American.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So stupid to do that, John, though.
Right, right.
I mean, to force a bodybuilder to have to, come on, you're a bodybuilder. Nobody's trying to be a track runner or lift.
Right.
Why would you force a guy to do that? It's so stupid.
Well, they also had to do an interview, right, to show their personality.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And one guy won. This is a little bit of trivia that a lot of people don't know. One guy won. This is unbelievable. A man won the 1955 AU Mr. America on the basis of his personality.
Wow.
Not his physique. On his personality.
Wow.
He gave him, this guy's name was Steve Klesanin. I don't know. You probably know very few people. You got to really be into bodybuilding history, remember.
Right.
This guy, very interestingly enough, this is unbelievable. This guy went on to become a CIA agent. He became a spy.
No kidding.
Isn't that amazing? Very few people know this.
Wow.
But at this, go back after this. Go on Google and look for pictures of the 55 in America. Look at it, and there's a shot of him on the winner's platform. He's pasty white. Harry Johnson was in that show, who won it in 59. Harry Johnson made nothing but abs and made him look terrible.
Wow.
This looked like a guy off the street. He had no muscle. He just looked like, no, just an average. I'm not saying he wasn't well built, but he didn't even look like a bodybuilder. He had pasty white skin. There was like five guys standing in the five top finishers. He was the worst. He didn't even come close to the other. The guy who placed fifth, I think, was Harry Johnson, who was, like I say, 10 times better than him.
Jeez.
And you read what happened is, Steve Klesanin was gave this a wonderful interview. Blah, blah, blah. I'm thinking, wait a minute. They gave him the Mr. America on an interview? Are you kidding me?
Wow, that's amazing.
Seriously, those judges should have been taken out and hung by a tree right there outside the auditorium. You give a guy could you imagine today,
yeah,
Mr. Olympia, you know, they're going to have the guy who normally plays left. Well, he's going to beat, who's the name of the guy who just won?
Brandon Curry.
Huh?
Brandon Curry.
Brandon Curry. And this guy who, let's say, can't even polish Brandon Curry's toes.
Right.
You know. They announced that he's the winner because, well, he gives a little bit better interview. Are you kidding me? That'd be a riot.
The internet would be on fire.
Oh, my God. It's hard to believe these things actually happened, but they did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's one for the books.
Right, right.
Mr. America on an interview.
Oh, God.
This is something that you put in Ripley's Believe It or Not. You know?
Right, right.
Seriously.
Yeah, so Dickerson got sixth in that Olympia first time. But then, like a month later, you remember he won that Canada Pro Cup? And he beat out Mike Mensur. He beat out Boyer Coe. He beat out Robbie Robinson. He beat Casey. So I knew.
Wasn't that Larry Scott's last appearance that year? Or am I wrong about that?
I think Larry did compete in 79, but it wasn't that one. I think it was before the Olympia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know the last pro show, he didn't place even in the top five, if I remember correctly.
That was the Canada Diamond Pro Cup, which was in the fall.
Larry
got ninth in that one, yeah.
Yeah, sad ending for a guy who was the first Mr. Olympia, you know?
Yeah, Roy Callender won that.
Yeah, Roy was a great bodybuilder.
I did an interview with Roy, and he was talking about winning that contest, and I said, oh, yeah, I forgot Larry did that show. He goes, well, you might have forgot. I didn't forget. It was like he said he was in awe of Larry when he competed with him, even though he wasn't at his best.
Right.
He went back to him, and he said, I'm honored just to be on the same stage as you. I mean, that's how much reverence he had for Larry Scott, you know?
You know, Roy is a great guy. When I became friends with him on Facebook,
yeah,
he wrote to me. He said, "It's an honor." And I'm thinking, an honor for him to be friends with
right,
me?
Right.
Are you kidding me?
I know.
He's one of the greatest bodybuilders. It's my honor, not his.
Right, exactly.
He's such a polite guy. You
he
know?
Is. He's such a great guy.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Jerry Branham again for joining us. And, of course, next week we will be back again with Jerry, where we're going to talk about the year 1989. Got a lot of great things to talk about that year, including the Olympia, Vince Taylor's pro debut, the very first Arnold Classic, which was won by Rich Gaspari, and the Nationals that year, the MPC Nationals, which was won by Troy Zuccolato. So we got a lot of great stuff to talk about next week. Again, Merry Christmas, everybody. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas with your family, your friends, your loved ones. Enjoy this time with them. It's a very special time of the year. And I want to thank everybody for listening again to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. If you're new to the show, please go back and listen to some of the old shows. If you're a loyal listener, thank you very much. I really appreciate your support. And we will do it again in 2020. So we'll be back next week. Thanks to Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Merry Christmas. Take care.